You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
Are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you're going to have a good day. Today is Wednesday, so you got to get over that hump. And so I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it must be done, you will get it done. And you will do it safely. You'll keep your distance. You'll keep your face covered. And you get it done. There you go. Because it's still ugly out there, ain't it? You bet it is. So, you're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. And the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. And there will be programs that are dated and titled. There's a quicker way. Yeah, babaoshi.net. Babaoshi, BABAOSHI.net. And you click on that, and there will be those programs for your listening. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. This program, once again, is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. On Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And that is followed by from 8 p.m. to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report, 8 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening, brothers and sisters, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays at 8 p.m. Time for an Awakening. From 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday, Sister Talk with Host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., the Sankofa Elders Council on Saturdays from 7 to 9. On Sunday, once again at 7 p.m., the Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. I heard a commercial on Black Information Radio, Black Information Network, and they said they're getting close to getting the monies that they need to establish a supermarket here in the Atlanta area. And, of course, once that is done, they'll be looking at other areas around the country, other cities, particularly where we are predominant in areas, and to put a supermarket in those areas. And so the products that we produce, the produce from Black farmers, the canned goods, whatever that we produce, we will be selling to our people. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tayemba has been taking our people to the motherland for many years, over 450 of our people. And, of course, he will do it again. He's looking forward to it. Upcoming in November, November 18th through the 29th. Going to Tanzania, November 18th through the 29th, Tanzania. December 24th to January 5th, 2022, to Ghana. April 1st to April 11th, 2022, to Senegal and Gambia. And then May 24th to June 5th, 2022, once again to Ghana, West Africa. All of these trips are affordable at $3,700 per person. You can put a deposit down of $400, pay on it until it is done, and there you go. And everything that you need is on the website. All the documentation, all the information, shots, so forth, all of that stuff is right there on the website. So brothers and sisters, go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see pictures, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Aha. Habashah Incorporated.org, brothers and sisters. They are doing the work. Habashah Incorporated here in the Atlanta area. They have these projects, the Kashi Project, and Habashah Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and the Urban Green Jobs. The Kashi Project is on the motherland. The Kashi Project is in Ghana. And if you go to the website, you'll see the photos of all the work that is being done. It is beautiful. And, of course, they also have a repatriation initiative when you learn how to just go back home. It's an 18-month course, and so you get all the particulars. Habashah Incorporated.org. Habashah. The LEDGE program. LEDGE stands for Land for the Environmental Development for African People. Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. The LEDGE program. Brothers and sisters, they deal in the four areas of human existence: food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects on six different countries in Africa, over 170 employed, and over 260 members. They need more members. In fact, membership has its privileges. You know, you probably heard that. Well, one of the privileges is that you will be able to purchase land in Tanzania for $250 because you are a member of the LEDGE Group. Go to LEDGEGroup.com and see for yourself. Bibi Atumi. Bibi Atumi. ABIBITUMI.com. BibiAtumi.com. Brothers and sisters, they have language classes. But just go to the website. Make it a favor. There's shopping that you can do. Bibi Atumi TV. Bibi Atumi. Oh, man. Just so much. It should be the place for you. Should be the place for us so we can re-Africanize ourselves, de-whitenize ourselves. Don't you know we need it? You do know we need it. So go to bibiatumi.com, ABIBITUMI.com. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta, Georgia, on Ralph David Abernathy, across street from Soul Vegetarian, down the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which, of course, the Shrine is open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7. And you know the Shrine sells everything. Their services are Zoomed or streamed on Sunday. So check that out. The Shrine of the Black Madonna. And, of course, Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. And they have vegan food on Saturdays and Sundays. Saturdays and Sundays, you can get you a good, delicious plate, vegan food. Otherwise, they have good smoothies, fruit drinks, health drinks, pastries, all kinds of good stuff at Wadada's. Medu Netra Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, my good sister, Mama Nia. In fact, Sunday, Bayuna Bello from Haiti, she'll be doing a presentation on her book, Sheroes of the Haitian Revolution. It's outstanding. Heroes of the Haitian Revolution. She's captivating. Beautiful sister. So that's this Sunday at the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Medu has books, postcards, greeting cards, certificates, figurines, T-shirts, all kinds of good stuff. Give Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, that's east of here in Atlanta, suburb of Atlanta. My good brother Gazimde Ajamu is the proprietor, and he put a coffee bar in his place and serving delicious African coffees and teas and bean pies and all good stuff. But of course, he has books and the red, black, and green shoes, the NASGAS shoes, all kinds of other good stuff, T-shirts. So give brother a call if you looking for a book, and the same thing too. If you're looking for a book from whether you want to call the Shrine or call the Medu Bookstore or call the Black Dot. That's the beauty of being here in Atlanta. At least there's some bookstores. There's some places don't have bookstores no more. That's for real. So give brother Gazimde a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. All right. Homeland Village Cultural Gift Shop in Macon, Georgia. Homeland, man, it's a beautiful place. That brother has a, every inch of his store has, it speaks to, he's got furniture, he's got clothing, he has books, tapes, you name it. He even serves food, you know. Brother Abijah is just on it, man. So that's 2910 Napier Avenue in Macon, Georgia. And give him a call at 478-256-1166. That's 478-256-1166. The Homeland Village and Cultural Center. Africa must unite. Yeah. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. Tomorrow they have their Thursday night broadcast at 9 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. That's every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. You can call just to listen, or if you have a question, if you press 1, you'll be put up at the top, and you can give your question, comment, or concern, and that is 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, as we like to say, family-centered economics. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. Inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Brothers and sisters, once again, Sun Goddess Scents, Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. Give our good sister Shelly Amundset a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Scents. Sanjay Dash Haiti, my good sister Gabby is doing outstanding work in the rural area in the hills in the northeastern portion of Haiti. The recent earthquake happened in the southwest portion. You know, if you look at that Haiti and you have an understanding of its geography, you know there's a part that, like a peninsula, sticks out. It happened there, which is about two and a half, 3 hours away from Port-au-Prince, where the earthquake struck in 2010. So, Sanjay Dash Haiti, Sonje Dash Haiti, AYITI.org, Sanjay Dash Haiti. Akabin Institute with my good brother, Baba Baruti and Mama Yah. Loved him. What a beautiful couple. And they have upcoming 5th annual African Warriors Day, Men's Day, African Warrior Men's Day. And that's going to be this Friday, September 10th. I'll let you know details. It's more than likely a Zoom and what you can do to participate in the 5th annual African Warrior Men's Day with Baba Baruti. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and read the Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Yes. September 7th. Unlike her counterpart in the ancient Near East and classical Greece and Rome, the women in Africa occupied a position of equality and respect. She inherited as well as sole property. signed legal documents, and played a very important role in the daily life of the state. In addition to these powers, the natural line of inheritance was through the woman. In Africa, the woman, after marriage, retained all her individuality. Her name does not change. She continues to bear the name of her family. Sister Ife. Our traditional egalitarian gender roles are the reason why most African women still want African men to assume primary responsibility for their areas in which they are naturally and have been socialized to be more skilled. Yet African women are not delusional. They know this place is not traditional Africa. They know this place is not traditional Africa. They know this place does not reflect a true, divinely sanctioned social order. But that does not take away from the yearning for the way of those traditions. So in spite of existing in a racist and sexist cultural chaos, they remain staunchly womanist. Given the violent, highly competitive relationship between European sexes historically, feminism is a logical reaction. Hate is natural. Hate is naturally there. Womanism, on the other hand, is the only untainted African possibility. As thusly defined, womenists seek balance with men. They require mutual respect and share power between men and women. As a womanist, African women want a united front with their men. They still desire family and community, minus Urugu's misogynistic way. Affirm, I respect the identity African women have demanded and asserted throughout our history. Affirm, I respect the identity African women have demanded and asserted throughout our history. September 8th. African leadership on the continent or in the diaspora is still under the illusion that the American, European, and Asian governmental systems have a legitimate concern for our social and economic well-being. This is falsehood. Mazeri Tep. Just as all of us are menticidal to one degree or another, equally so, all of Urugu are psychopathic racists to one degree or another. Whether all of them actually know themselves to be so or not is irrelevant to the fact that their collective energy is geared toward finding more and more creative and effective ways to commit genocide against African people from within African people. They are not to blame, though. They are what they are, no more, no less. And truly, they could not be less. They are consistent in what they are. And most of us are even finding the most creative ways to remain consistently fooled by them. And therein lies the problem. It is a grand self-deception, which begs the question of whether we are relative to us in this struggle against them. Are we in pursuit of us or them? Will we save ourselves or them? It should be self-evident that, as a function of menticide, the destroyer is made the savior. And let me say that again. It should be self-evident that, as a function of menticide, the destroyer, the European, the Caucasian, the cracker, whatever, is made the savior of those who worship these false European gods, necessarily speak and act against us. All we need to do is study the path of treason crafted by those held up as our voice, those who have been propped up in positions of authority by enemies to ensure that there will be done. As above, so below is the worst case scenario. When those above hold on high aspirations reflecting an illusion of inclusion, which was rapidly degenerated into inclusion of only the delusion. Affirm, I accept no delusional falsehoods about others' benevolence towards us. Affirm, I accept no delusional falsehoods about others' benevolence towards us. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Yes, the Inye Sesim. Brothers and sisters, for the next two programs, this is what we're going to be talking about. The inside job, that is 9/11. This program and Friday's program is titled, Who You Gonna Believe, Me or Your Lying Eyes? Man. You know, I was preparing. Well, Monday, September 10th, I went to the courthouse. I was given a letter summoned to go to the courthouse to deal with jury duty. And you know, I sure in the hell didn't want to do no damn jury duty. In fact, I stayed there for hours until finally I was called and I talked to, I don't know, whoever I needed to talk to, and they chose me. So I got chosen for jury duty. In fact, one of the brothers from the nation got chosen as well. And I gave him a ride. And we were talking about, because we knew the case was about this Caucasian who didn't want to pay child support. We was gonna roast his ass. You know, he didn't want to pay child support. Okay. And so the next day, Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, I'm preparing to go do my thing at jury duty. I had to go first to the fire department's headquarters to get a slip to present to those at the courthouse so I can get paid. And so I'm drying off. I'm taking a shower. And a friend of mine calls. She says, Oshie, the World Trade Center's on fire. I turn on the TV, it's on fire. And the first thing I think, she didn't say it, you know, that it was hit by a plane. She just said it's on fire. So I'm turning the TV on and I'm thinking, well, you know, high-rise buildings, sometimes they have restaurants on upper floors and so forth. And maybe they had an explosion of one of the restaurants or something like that. I don't know. Looked really bad. So as I continue to prepare, as I'm watching, another plane hits the tower, and now I am catatonic. I am stunned. I'm like, wow, this is an attack. This is deep. So I make it downtown, and I'm at the fire department headquarters, which is less than a couple blocks from the courthouse. And so I'm waiting to get the slip, and of course, talking to some people that I know there, know everybody there, because it's a firehouse too, and the third floor is where the administration building is. The second floor is the living quarters of the firefighters at Engine 2, 20, and Ladder 2, and the battalion chief and everything else, all that. So, as I'm there talking, the second tower that was hit was the first tower to implode, and it starts crumbling down, and all this, you know, pandemonium broke. And, you know, they're crying and screaming because we knew that firefighters lost their lives and everybody else in that situation lost their lives. And so when I got my slip and went to the courthouse, everything was closed. All federal buildings, all state buildings were going to be closed. So I didn't have to deal with jury duty, which was cool because I didn't want to deal with jury duty, you know. So took the brother, gave him a ride again, the Muslim brother. And I went by my friend's house and started talking about it. And then come to find out another plane was shot down. Excuse me. Another plane crashed into a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. You know, the people on the plane were calling their relatives and
And they said the plane was taken over, so they're going to bum rush the plane, bum rush the cockpit, and give the hijackers a beat down and try to commandeer the plane. Well, the plane wound up crashing into a field in Shanksville. I must be honest, I have not done a lot of research on what happened to the plane in Shanksville. Most of my research has been done on the Twin Towers and definitely Building Number 7 and, of course, the Pentagon. So those things happen. And so as I'm, you know, looking at this some days later, and, of course, they said that some Arabs, some people who were supposed to be friendly to the United States, some Saudi Arabians went to a flight school in Florida. Now, of course, you and I both know that they don't teach you how to fly, you know, passenger jets at a flight school. They teach you how to fly twin engine Cessnas and those kinds of planes, more smaller planes. You know, could it be the same? I don't think so, but hey, whatever. So these cats, and then, of course, they said that in their preparation of what they were going to do on the morning of, on Tuesday morning of September 11th, they'd been partying that whole weekend, cocaine, hookers, you know, strippers, whatever, you know, alcohol. That's what they said. So, you know, I don't believe that. So, because all of this started to me, I was very suspicious. Because being a firefighter for over 31 years, early on in your career, you learn about things that firefighters need to do to help mitigate problems. You learn how to deal with trench rescue, you know, substations and so forth. You learn how to deal with water rescue, high-rise rescue, you know, deal with high-rise, you know, all of these things, you know. And watching the tape or the videos or whatever on high-rise rescue, they told you the first thing you do on a high-rise is you get there and you establish a command post in the lobby of the high-rise, and you secure the elevators. You secure the elevators so you can get your personnel up and down the elevators with the equipment necessary to mitigate the problem. You know. And so that's what they did on that day. They took command in the lobby of the North Tower, I think it's the North Tower, you know. And you help to evacuate the people. You may have to take a section of hose, three sections of hose, a large section and two smaller sections up to the fire floor. Actually, you take it once, it'll save the fire is on the 14th and 15th floor. Then you would take it to the 16th floor, if there is one. Take it to the 16th floor. So when you try to, and it connected to a standpipe. A standpipe is where the fire department is. A fire department hookup on the outside of the building. For the standpipe, the fire department hooks up there, and they pump water all the way up to the 16th floor. And so then you're hooked up, and all you got to do is turn the water on, and then there you go. You can go put the fire out. Well, fire was on multiple floors because of what happened. Electricity was knocked out in the building. All the elevators did not work, so they had to take the equipment up to 80 stories, 80 flights of stairs or more, you know. And so looking at those videos all those years, not one skyscraper that was hit by an airplane collapsed. Not one, ever. Collapsed. And so 9/11 or the World Trade Center and definitely Building Number 7 and definitely the Pentagon, all of them was cause for concern for me. Now, understand something. I've been an African-centered man for most of my adult life. So I've had no faith at all in this system. I have no faith at all in this system to act right, do right, be right, you know, none at all. And so I've always been suspicious. I do not trust them. That's like the same thing with this virus. In fact, I was talking to Baba earlier, and this virus is what we had 20 years ago to kick this off. That virus is happening now. That's why they can say, get the vaccine, get the vaccine. What else can I do? No, nothing you can do. Get the vaccine. The same people were talking about population control. Talking about get the vaccine. I don't know if you saw this, but there was a brother who was getting the vaccine who held up a sign that said, I know they were wrong in the Tuskegee experiment, but I believe them now. They will do right by now. They will never do right. Brothers and sisters, it is not in them to do right. Never. That's why I just read the NSA and told you they will never do right. So now I'm looking at this. And then a few months later, In Plain Sight came out. And they talked about the discrepancy. They talked about the things, the irregularities of the government's position of 2019. And, of course, those who did it. Osama bin Laden and his group. There's cats right now in Guantanamo Bay. That's another thing that's always bothered me. Here, this country has waged a serious war. Not real conflict, but denying Cuba, embargoing Cuba, blockading Cuba, and yet they have a peace in Cuba, in Guantanamo Bay, a prison in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, that they control. I know damn well that there would never be anything from any country on this, here in America, a prison or any damn thing. What a world. So now all this information started to come out, and a group was formed called Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. One of the main people was Richard Gage, and I started looking at them and others. And I, in fact, I as in doing a little research just a day or two yesterday as well, there's one group that was talking about, you know, they believe the government line, and they believe that Richard Gage and the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth are whack. These are a bunch of whack jobs, you know. Believe me, and understand this, brothers and sisters. The mainstream media backs whatever the government says. All the institutions, the same thing. NISA, the National Institute of Science and Technology's position, particularly on Building Number 7, was that when the World Trade Center's towers came down, and they came down because of fire and the melting of the steel, and once one floor came down, it's like a pancake, pow, 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 you know? And some of the fire jumped on Building Number 7, causing it to have fire on multiple floors and then weakening the structural integrity of the building. So I think that might have hit that building around about, let's say, 10 o'clock. And then around 5:30, it went down. It came down, you know. Yeah, it came down. And how these buildings came down, just did not sit well with me. And so as I continue to listen to and look at 9/11, architects and engineers for 9/11 truth, other programs in plain sight, looking at what Michael Moore put out, Fahrenheit 9/11. No, I mean, I was just, what if I could get to help me understand this and formulate what I felt in my heart and mind I already knew based upon my understanding as a firefighter and based upon my logic, my reasoning. Is it plausible? Does it make sense? And truly, a lot of this did not make sense. Building number 7 is the Pentagon. Doesn't make sense. It does not make sense. And so after we take a break in a little while, I'm going to be asking you to join me in this conversation. What information do you have? How you feel about it? 20 years later, every year, I was still on the fire department, of course, when it went down. You know, 2001, I didn't get off the fire department until 2006. And every year, they, hold a memorial across the country of firefighters who would, bring the companies together. And I don't know if they saluted the flag or not. All I know is I stood in line, my head bowed. I didn't salute. I didn't put my hand over my heart. You know, I just stood there. I guess one might argue respectfully. I think I was. You know, I didn't want to participate, honestly. And I remember having some conversation with one of the cats one day after that. You know, I said, I don't believe it. Number one, The older I got, the more I understood these people are just a bunch of liars, consistently, continuously, habitually. So I'm going to be playing a few pieces that I think will help shape this conversation. Of course, you can join this conversation. We're going to start the break early, and then I'm come back with a piece. I think the first piece I want to play is a tribute, to some degree, to Ed Asner. Ed Asner just died, you know, and but he was a staunch advocate for justice, and he believed in the architects and engineers for 9/11 truth. So I'm going to play that particular piece. And so, and then there'll be another one. I want to play this one with Jesse the Body Ventura. And about a number of years ago, and I couldn't find it, but about 3 or 4 years ago, a firefighter in New York was being interviewed, looked like Times Square. And he was there. He was a fire marshal in New York City. And to me, it's very good. It's very good. In fact, he wound up working with architects and engineers for 9/11 truth. You know, presently they have over 3,000. My first time I saw architects and engineers for 9/11 truth, they had a few hundred. I didn't know they're, you know, well over in their organization, not in their organization, but well over, you know, 8,000, 10,000 architects across the country, maybe, you know, and engineers of various types, what kind of architects and engineers they are. But now they have over 3,000 people in those professions who believe that what took place on Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, was some sugar honey iced tea. with some BS. So we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, I'll play those, and then it'll be you. So, if you have some comments, some questions or concerns, or how you felt about it, I want to hear about it. And we'll talk even on Friday more about it and get into some detail on Friday. Like, you know, there's a saying, follow the money. I know you know this, follow the money. So we'll be dealing with that. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blocktalkradionetwork.com. We're going to take a break now. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Somebody blew up America. All thinking people oppose terrorism, both domestic and international. But one should not be used to cover the other. Somebody blew up America. They say it's some terrorist, some barbaric Arab in Afghanistan. It wasn't our American terrorists. It wasn't the Klan or the skinheads or the them that blows up nigger churches or reincarnates us on death row. It wasn't Trent Lott or David Duke or Giuliani or Shunla Helms retiring. It wasn't the gonorrhea in costume, the white sheet diseases that have murdered black people, terrorized reason and sanity, most of humanity, as they pleases. They say, who say, who do the saying? Who is them paying? Who tell the lies? Who in disguise? Who had the slaves? Who got the bucks out the bucks? Who got fat from plantations? Who genocided Indians, tried to waste the black nation? Who live on Wall Street, the first plantation? Who cut your nuts off? Who rape your mind? Who lynch your pa? Who got the tar? Who got the feathers? Who had the match? Who set the fires? Who killed and hired? Who say they God, still be the devil? Who the biggest only? Who the most goodest? Who do Jesus resemble? Who created everything? Who the smartest? Who the greatest? Who the richest? Who say you ugly and they the good lookingest? Who define art? Who define science? Who made the bombs? Who made the guns? Who bought the slaves? Who sold them? Who call you them names? Who say Dahmer wasn't insane? Who? Who stole Puerto Rico? Who stole the Indies, the Philippines, Manhattan, Australia, and the Hebrides? Who forced opium on the Chinese? Who owned them buildings? Who got the money? Who think you funny? Who lock you up? Who owned the papers? Who owned the slave ship? Who run the army? Who was the fake president? Who the ruler? Who the banker? Who the devil on the real side? Who got rich from Armenian genocide? Who the biggest terrorist? Who changed the Bible? Who kill the most people? Who do the most evil? Who don't worry about survival? Who have the colonies? Who stole the most land? Who rule the world? Who say they good but only do evil? Who the biggest executioner? Who? Who own the oil? Who want more oil? Who told you what you think that later you find out is a lie? Who? Who found Bin Laden? Maybe they Satan. Who paid the CIA? Who knew the bomb was gonna blow? Who know where the terrorists learned to fly in Florida and San Diego? Who knew why five Israelis was filming the explosion and cracking their sides at the notion? Who need fossil fuel when the sun ain't going nowhere? Who make the credit cards? Who get the biggest tax cut? Who walked out of the conference against racism? Who killed Malcolm, Kennedy, and his brother? Who killed Dr. King? Who would want such a thing? Are they linked to the murder of Lincoln? Who invaded Grenada? Who made money from apartheid? Who keep the Irish a colony? Who overthrew Chile and Nicaragua later? Who killed David Sebeko, Chris Hani, the same ones who killed Biko, Cabral, Neruda, Allende, Che Guevara, Sandino? Who killed Kabila, the ones who wasted Lumumba, Manlane, Betty Shabazz, Princess Di, Ralph Featherstone, Lil Bobby? Locked up Mandela, Daruba, Geronimo, Asada, Mumia, Garvel, Dashiell Hammett, Althea Sutton? Who killed Huey Newton, Fred Hampton, Medgar Evers, Mikey Smith, Walter Rodney? Was it the ones who tried to poison Fidel? Who tried to keep the Vietnamese oppressed? Who put a price on Lenin's head? Who put the Jews in ovens? And who helped them do it? Who set America first and okayed the yellow stars? Ho, ho! Who killed Rosa Luxemburg? Liebknecht? Who murdered the Rosenbergs? And all the good people iced, tortured, assassinated, vanished? Who got rich from Algeria, Libya, Haiti, Iran, Iraq, Saudi, Kuwait, Lebanon, Syria, Egypt, Jordan, Palestine? Who cut off people's hands in the Congo? Who invented AIDS? Who put the germs in the Indians' blankets? Who thought up the Trail of Tears? Who blew up the Maine and started the Spanish-American War? Who got Sharon back in power? Who backed Batista, Hitler, Bilbo, Chiang Kai-shek? Who? Who decided affirmative action had to go? Reconstruction, the New Deal, the New Frontier, the Great Society? Who do Thomas Clarence work for? Who do come out the colon's mouth? Who know what kind of skeezer is a Condoleezza? Who pay Connolly to be a wooden Negro? Who give genius awards to Homo Locus Subsidiary? Who overthrew Nkrumah, Bishop? Who poisoned Robeson? Who tried to put Du Bois in jail? Who framed rap Jameel Alameen? Who framed the Rosenbergs, Garvey, the Scottsboro Boys, the Hollywood Ten? Who set the Reichstag fire? Who knew the World Trade Center was going to get bombed? Who told 4,000 Israeli workers at the Twin Towers to stay home that day? Why did Sharon stay away? Who? Who? Explosion of owl, the newspapers say. Devil's face could be seen. Explosion of owl, the newspapers say the devil's face could be seen. Who? Who make money from war? Who make dough from fear and lies? Who want the world like it is? Who want the world to be ruled by imperialism and national oppression and terror, violence and hunger and poverty? Who is the ruler of hell? Who is the ruler of hell? Who is most powerful? Who you know ever seen God? But everybody seen the devil. Like an owl exploding in your life, in your brain, in yourself. Like an owl who know the devil all night, all day, if you listen. Like an owl exploding in fire. like an owl exploding in your life, in your brain, in yourself. Like an owl who know the devil all night, all day, if you listen. Like an owl exploding in fire, we hear the questions rise in terrible flame, like the whistle of a crazy dog. Like the acid vomit of the fire of hell. Who and who and who?
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Amira Baraka. Who blew up America? Amira Baraka. Man, it's a deep piece. I think it's a good piece. Yeah, but we'll play it again on Friday. Who blew up America? Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern time. So on Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jahar Ahmed. That's followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and the Taki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10 on Monday, Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays. Saturday from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. So I'm going to play this piece. Like I said, Ed Asner recently just passed. And I remember him as a staunch advocate and so forth. He played some interesting characters and he was in Roots. He was a slave driver, I think, a captain, or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, this is a piece, and this is Architects for 9/11 Truth, talking about Building 7 in New York City, Building Number 7, and how it went down like a regular demolition, like you always see. And it is impossible that that could happen from fires caused by fires jumping on Building 7, even though there was a few fires on multiple floors, but it was not totally engulfed in flame. And even buildings that are totally engulfed in flame don't go down like a demolition. So we'll check this out. And we'll be right back and answer. If you got questions or comments, please give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832.
Throughout the ages, architects and engineers have designed and built the great structures that have made our world and withstood the test of time. Hi, I'm Ed Asner. Welcome to Architects and Engineers. Let's look now at modern steel frame buildings. This is the Empire State Building, a marvel of modern architecture. It was built to last. Architects and engineers of today use computers to design and engineer buildings that will endure the forces of nature, such as earthquakes, fires, and hurricanes. This modern skyscraper was also built to last. We've seen buildings completely destroyed like this before, but only when done intentionally. Danny Jawenko is the expert on this in Europe. What did he say?
Dit is controlled demolition.
Zeker weten.
Zeker weten. Er is nagesprongen. Dit is in opdracht gebeurd. Het heeft een team gedaan van experts.
Let's compare. Explosives are used to demolish buildings like this in just seconds. Okay, so it's a controlled demolition. What's the problem with that? Well, it happened on the afternoon of 9/11 at the World Trade Center. Let's just think about this. Controlled demolitions cannot be engineered and rigged in a day. It takes months. And therefore, this event must have been planned in advance.
Keep your eye on that building. It'll be coming down.
We are walking back. It's a building about to blow up.
Did they actually use the word brought down? And who was it that was telling you this?
The fire department. And they did use the word, we're going to have to bring it down.
And these people heard explosions.
We heard this sound that sounded like a clap of thunder. It looked like there was a shockwave ripping through the building and the windows all busted out. About a second later, the bottom floor caved out. The building followed after that.
He takes his hand off and you hear 3, 2, 1, and it was boom, 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 boom.
And these reporters recognized it as a controlled demolition.
And I turned in time to see what looked like a skyscraper implosion. It looked like it had been done by a demolition crew. The whole thing just collapsing down on itself.
For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before, when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
It was almost as if it were a planned implosion. It just pancaked.
So what's the problem if this was a planned demolition? Well, we are told by government agencies that this building came down as a result of normal office fires. The National Institute of Standards and Technology produced their final report in 2008.
World Trade Center 7 collapsed because of fires fueled by office furnishings. It did not collapse from explosives or from fuel oil fires.
Well, what do you think brought down the building?
And what caught my eye is more than 1,300 architects and engineers examined the evidence about Building 7's collapse and disagree with the official report issued by the National Institute of Standards and Technology. I certainly am much more open-minded about it than I was, and it is because of the involvement of the 9/11 families and all these engineers and architects.
You are about to hear from architect of 23 years, Richard Gage, AIA, member of the American Institute of Architects and founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Now there are more than 1,500 architects and engineers who say that it could not have been brought down by office fires. They are backed by 9/11 family members. We're calling for an independent, unbiased investigation.
I'm Richard Gage. Fires have never before caused the collapse of any skyscraper, even though there are numerous examples of much hotter, larger, and longer-lasting fires in these buildings. And in the case of Building 7, the fire that NIST said started the collapse had actually burned out over an hour before. It could not have caused the collapse, as NIST claims. Yet this 47-story, modern steel-frame skyscraper, which was not hit by an airplane, collapses mostly into its own footprint, like a house of cards, as fast as a bowling ball falling off the side of the building, in just under 7 seconds. Listen to the experts.
Building number 7 descended in free fall for the first 100 feet, which means that there was absolutely no resistance to descent whatsoever.
NIST has admitted it went into free fall for 8 stories. And going from motionless to free fall instantly, that's a bothersome part of the puzzle because NIST never explained it.
got a building that came down in its own footprint. So all of the columns really needed to be severed at the same time in order for that structure to fall the way that we saw.
The symmetry is the smoking gun.
The whole building completely comes down in one continuous motion. There couldn't have been any structural resistance.
According to NIST, the failure occurred at column 79 on level 12. They're talking about a single columnar collapse or failure that resulted in a total collapse of the building.
It is possible that you could have a local failure as a result of a connection failing. But the likelihood of that failure dragging the entire building in such a fashion that all the columns would fail at the same time is an impossibility.
Impossibility?
Yes.
What I saw, it was a classic implosion. The center of the core, the penthouse area, starts to move first, and then the building follows along with it.
I'd like to know why NIST excluded the document from FEMA in Appendix C that documented the evidence of melting steel. Why is this forensic evidence not being included in the report?
In an office fire, you cannot generate enough heat to melt steel. And yet we have evidence of molten iron. R.J. Lee Company, USGS, and Dr. Stephen Jones's work, all three separately found these microspheres.
In the dust, we found what we characterize as unreacted thermitic material in the shape of some very tiny red-gray chips, which have different properties, and in the reaction they produce molten iron, which is the prime indication of a thermitic reaction. And such a reaction can be used to destroy steel structures. What we have found is a modern version of thermite, which we call nanothermite.
There were these iron microspheres present in all of the dust samples that needed to have been formed in extremely high temperatures.
I've independently seen thermitic activity within two separate independent samples of World Trade Center dust. My contention, based on finding thermite residue in the dust, is that it happened before. It didn't happen after in the fires that ensued in the rubble pile afterwards. All the characteristics of the microspheres tell me that thermite was involved in melting those steel beams.
So thermite, if it was present at the World Trade Center and created this molten metal that so many witnesses and photographic evidence shows, would also explain the fact that the fires could not be put out at Ground Zero.
The only thing that is consistent with all of the evidence that we have that could cause such a thing is the use of thermite to cut through the steel.
You'd get down below and you'd see molten steel. Molten steel running down the channel rails. Like you're in a foundry.
Yeah.
Like lava.
A volcano.
Well, the manual gets into thermite, and if it says if you have melted steel or concrete, which we had on 9/11, we should test for it.
It's this fused element of steel, molten steel and concrete and all of these things all fused by the heat into one single element.
We're asking for an investigation that follows national standards. There's no excuse to not test for this. If terrorists use explosives 93, why didn't we test for them? If all these witnesses heard explosions, why aren't we testing for them?
NIST concedes that they found no evidence for explosives. So then we asked them, well, did you look? And they said, no, we did not look for explosives or residues of explosives.
So the preconceived notion of NIST is that there's no evidence for explosives, and so there's no point in looking. That is the most unscientific thing that you can possibly think of, not to look because you don't expect to find evidence, and in fact the evidence is overwhelming. They state these conclusions for which there's virtually no evidence, and then they ignore conclusions that can be drawn from the evidence.
The Freedom of Information Act request to NIST was denied with the claim that releasing this data might jeopardize public safety. How could it possibly jeopardize public safety?
the destruction of evidence was a criminal act in itself. It was already being carted away and destroyed when the FEMA investigators got there, about a month after September 11th.
You can't do science when you are deprived of the evidence and when your hypothesis is the least valid instead of the most likely. And the most likely hypothesis in the case of Building 7 wasn't even mentioned. This is not science.
The scientific forensic evidence, ignored by NIST, but carefully reviewed by teams of technical professionals, corroborates the hypothesis of explosive controlled demolition. We've traveled to 21 foreign countries and 32 American cities, bringing this evidence to the attention of the public. And we're backed by 9/11 family members and other concerned citizens who are calling for an independent, unbiased investigation.
I'm a family member trying to find out the answers to the murder of 3,000 plus people. The bottom line is that it needs to be investigated properly.
Please look at architects and engineers. People all around the world, scientists all around the world, are questioning this. And there's some deep, deep explaining to do.
It took some kind of consciousness raising on my part before I was willing to look at the possibilities. And really, you need to go where the evidence leads.
As an engineer, and I have 3 degrees in engineering, I signed that petition for architects and engineers for 9/11 truth some time ago because the American people absolutely need the truth of 9/11.
Look at the evidence. In fact, I'll say this very categorically. Any reasonable person who looks at the evidence that's been brought forward has got to come away with the feeling that something has to be done, a real investigation has to be put forward.
We will never heal. This country will never, ever, ever forget that day. We have to demand a new investigation. I want justice here.
The country owns this. We were all victims. You all should want answers. It's not just ours, not just mine. We all lost something that day.
It's distressing for everyone to come to terms with this evidence, but we must pursue the truth wherever it leads. Look at the evidence and decide for yourself.
Yep, 9/11 truth. What say you, brothers and sisters? I know that for a lot of us, they can, you know, I'm just going to continue to go on with my life. You know, I know 9/11 was a horrific event. It changed a lot of things. It changed security. It changed how you can get to the airport, all the things you got to go to get through to there. And for me, initially, when I flew, I was constantly getting, my bags were constantly searched, whether I checked them. And if I didn't check them, they were definitely going to get searched because of my name, you know, even though it's not an Arab name, it's an African name, and it's a different name than Eddie Brown. And so they, you know, would constantly do that. And other things that have happened where the government has the opportunity to suspend whatever privileges or rights that you have. The government can suspend those. And then, of course, now with what's happening now with this plandemic, this pushing of vaccinations, and what has been said previously about population control and too many people on the earth, oh, man, it's just steep. It is just too deep. So what say you, brothers and sisters? Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. I want to another one right quick. This is a conversation 10 years later with George Stephanopoulos and Jesse the Body Ventura. You know, Jesse the Body Ventura has been putting information out contradictory or controversial for some time. You know, and I just mentioned that how they control the narrative. They told Spike Lee, you cannot, if you're going to make this documentary, a about 9/11. You cannot put anything that the architects and engineers for 9/11 truth has put out. We don't talk about anything controversial. I have seen many documentaries in the last 2 weeks. The series that National Geographic's put out, they're very heartwarming. They're very inspiring what human beings have done and sacrificing themselves and, you know, in friends and family who have died. You know, like the firefighters, one brother seen his brother and gave him a hug, and after that he died. The building collapsed on him. You know. So, I mean, these are the stories that are going to be told these next few days. I know ABC has women who have dealt with 9/11. All of these will be pulling at your heart, being very sentimental, their sentiment. They're not going to deal with hardcore issues. They're not going to deal with what is the truth of the situation. The bottom line is, they killed Osama bin Laden, and the blood of Osama bin Laden, you know, is on the hands of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. The blood of Muammar Gaddafi is on the hands of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And they killed Saddam Hussein under this pretense. All of them. That the European controls and dominates the world. So here's a piece, Jesse DeBody Ventura and George Stephanopoulos from 2011.
Jesse Ventura never shies away from a fight, not as a Navy SEAL, bodyguard for the Rolling Stones, pro wrestler, or as governor of Minnesota. And he's picking plenty more with his new book, 63 Documents the Government Does Not Want You to Read. Welcome back, Jesse Ventura. And I do promise, you do not have to follow Chris Rock the next time you're on the show.
Thank you, George. He is a tough act I have to follow. What a funny guy.
He is a very funny guy. But let's get right sure. here, because we talked about this a little bit your last time on the show as well. This whole idea that you have some documents which you say at least reinforce the idea that the government had advanced knowledge that 9/11 could happen.
Absolutely.
And didn't work to stop it. Now, I find a hard time believing you actually believe that.
Why? I'm a Vietnam veteran, and they lied to me about the Gulf of Tonkin incident. And that was the false flag operation that put us into the Vietnam War, where 58,000 of my generation were killed. And now, I was teaching at Harvard. When McNamara came through, it admitted it never happened. False flag operations, if you go through history, happen all the time before these wars.
But that's very different from saying that the government knew 9/11 was coming, knew the plans were coming, and didn't try to stop it.
Well, take a look at my book. It's no more shocking than our government going down to Nicaragua and infecting hundreds of people with syphilis to see if penicillin worked. George, let me state this. There are great people that work in government. There are dedicated, patriotic people in government. But when you read this book, the scary part of this book for me, you could substitute the word Nazi and it would work.
But the documents you use on 9/11 show, well, there's one document that suggests that Tower 7 fell down faster than it could have fallen down just by natural.
It doesn't suggest it. It says it. It said it fell at, if NIST report said it fell at free fall.
So then you make the
wait a minute. That means you got to defy the laws of physics. That means everything was removed. In which for anything to fall at
free fall
speed.
But then you make that leap then to the idea that it was demolished by explosives inside by the government.
I don't make a leap. Why didn't they check for explosives? They never did, if not to eliminate them. They didn't do that. This book is all documents that are out in the public domain. I'm not WikiLeaks. I didn't steal anything. You just got to find them. And there are documents here so disturbing, like the CIA's assassination manual. Excuse me, assassination is just a nice word for first-degree murder, and we have a manual that tells how to do it and everything about it. As far as I know, George, first-degree murder is illegal in every country in the world.
But
aren't there some cases where it would be justified, a tyrant who's killing hundreds of thousands of people?
Who makes the call? I'll say this, too, about if we go back to bin Laden, why haven't we indicted him? That gives us reason to go get him. We haven't indicted him. The government has never come forward, convened a grand jury, presented one shred of evidence that he did it officially, and get an indictment.
So you don't believe he was behind it either?
I don't know. But my government's lied to me so often, they've lost their credibility with me, George.
And you do have those, the documents you say support some of these theories
in
the book.
And the good thing about this book, it's not me telling you about the documents. I give you my opinion, but then we reprint every document so the reader can read for themselves.
I want to switch gears right now. You've had such a varied career. You're even once on a soap opera, Young and the Restless.
I've got a bone to pick with you.
What's that?
Why the hell did you decide not to run for president? I mean, imagine, the coming elections are boring the way they are. It would have been far more interesting with you in it.
Well, there's always 2004.
How about 2012? No way.
I will tell you this. If Ron Paul runs as an independent, I would give great consideration to being his running mate. As you see, I dedicated this book to Congressman
Ron Paul. Not if he runs as a Republican.
Never. No. I will not be a Democrat or Republican. They are the problem, not the solution. We need to abolish political parties in this country.
You got a couple of Republicans coming from your state, Michelle Bachmann and Tim Pawlenty.
Well, Michelle Bachmann is actually my congresswoman. I live in her district.
And could she be president?
Not with my vote, she won't be.
Okay, Jesse Ventura, thanks very much for coming and giving your candid views this morning.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. Give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. If we have some people in the queue, if you have a question or comment, hit star twice. That'll let me know that you're in there. Hit star twice. Yeah, I tell you, this is some deep stuff. I know it is. And for some people, it might be the first time they're hearing about this. They probably heard about it because it's 20 years. It's 20 years. You know? It's just like what he mentioned about the government going down into Nicaragua and injecting people with syphilis. Well, when they did that to us in the 40s and 50s, they already knew about syphilis. They already knew. They already knew what happens to people who are unmedicated or who cannot. They knew how it would affect them and eventually kill them. This is a very evil system, brothers and sisters, a very evil system. And people in a system where you want to dominate and control, human beings are expendable. There's collateral damage. They're expendable. So in order for them to do what they have done and have homeland security and take away whatever rights, although the Bill of Rights and all the other stuff in the Constitution ain't worth the paper it's printed on as far as I'm concerned. I reject all of this. I reject all of this. In fact, you know what my contention is for us to get out of this. For those who want to stay, you stay. But I would hope that you would have an understanding of who we are as African people and support that, as opposed to supporting these people, supporting Urugu, supporting the European, the Caucasian, the white man. One of our true problems is that we don't look at our history from our perspective. We might look at a history book that is written by Caucasians, other periodicals, or watch documentaries and so forth, but we don't look at it from our perspective. Well, Brother Oshie, y'all perspective might be biased. You're damn right it's biased. It's in favor of us. And how the history of the world, history of other people have affected us. When I dropped my grandson off this morning. I was listening to Black Information Network and on the radio here in Atlanta, and they were talking about what's happening in South Africa, the Indians in South Africa, the Indians from India. Of course, you know, they've been here a while. If you can remember, that's why I have no concern at all about Mahatma Gandhi, about him being who he is. And I wish that MLK understood that too and looked at his history as opposed to giving him the props that he did. I haven't been to the Center for Nonviolent Social Change, the MLK Center for Nonviolent Social Change. There's a statue of Mahatma Gandhi there that should be removed because he had no love for us. In South Africa, he called us Kaffirs. He had no love for African people. He called us all kinds of names. And what he did, because he understood that, you know, even though the Indians far outnumbered the Europeans, but the Europeans had weaponry. The Europeans had the ability to kill them. And so they engaged in nonviolent social change. And Dr. King felt that's what he could do here. Appeal to these people, march and demonstrate and sit-ins, you know. No. Mm-mm. No way, not I. I've done that. Open housing marches, you know. Even recent marches, you know, I know we've done that. But we also realize ain't nothing changing. If anybody wants to join this conversation, hit star twice. There's a number of people in the queue. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. I'm going to play this other piece then for you. This is a gentleman. Firefighter, New York City firefighter, and he was a fire marshal, and he began to work with architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. Here's an interview we did. Check it out.
This is Luke Radowski of WeAreChange.org. I'm here joined by a very special guest, Rudy Dent, who's a firefighter. Can you tell us your rank and where were you on the days of 9/11?
Yes, I was a firefighter. I was also trained as a fire marshal, and I was a chauffeur. I came down here after the two buildings came down. I was off that day, and I got called at home, and we came in on recall. I reported to the firehouse. We got our gear. We commandeered a mail truck, and we made our way down here. By that time, both the buildings were down, and we were standing in the staging area, and I saw Building 7 come down. Prior to its coming down, the mayor, Giuliani, and the fire commissioner were missing. They were in the building somewhere. Nobody knew where they were, but they were missing for quite some time. They finally emerged out of the building. And then shortly after that, the building came down.
At 5:25 in the afternoon.
Yes, yes.
Can you tell us where you were standing? Because obviously this is the Building 7 right in front of us on that day when it did collapse.
I was standing over in the staging area over by the river.
And was there anything you noticed or saw during the collapse of Building 7 that raised your suspicions to what actually happened here on that day?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, let me say that never in the history of history has a steel frame skyscraper ever come down because of fire. The simple answer to that is that fire does not reach temperatures hot enough to melt steel columns dislodge. And so that's never happened, ever in history. But that's the government story, okay? What I did see was a building come down on its own footprint, and it was a controlled demolition. Wow. A classic controlled demolition. And a controlled demolition is the product of 3 weeks or more of specifically placed, computerized, and timed, a coordinated implosion that causes a building to come down at free fall on it in its own footprint.
Yeah. Was there anything else from your experiences down here that makes you question the events of 9/11? From everything you saw, everything you experienced, everything you went through down here, was there a lot of questions that you were left with?
Absolutely. First of all, I'm a Vietnam veteran. I did 2.5 years in Vietnam. Then I served as a police officer for 4 years. I was here in 1993 with the first bombing attempt. I stood shoulder to shoulder with the FBI while they foraged inside for little paint chips. And with a little paint chip, their forensics can tell you the make and model of a vehicle. And that's what I did. And I witnessed the immensity of that explosion. That explosion was designed to bring the building down. But according to the experts and the FBI who were there at the time, they said the van was not placed properly. Had they done so, they could have caused the building to come down, and that would have been ugly because it would have come down sideways and taken a lot with it. Yeah. The second time around now, it was a controlled demolition. Everybody's seen it. If you go back on YouTube, you can see the splibs, you can see the explosions. You can see the antenna shooting straight up before it came down.
Now, a lot of people who have questions about 9/11 use the explanation that there was such immense heat, that there was molten kind of lava in the heat. Did you experience any of that?
No. We had guys in the building. They were calling for a hose so that they could mop up the isolated fires. They were in the building, and they were calling for additional backup. Yeah. So there was no concern about the fires. That's our job. That's what we do. I'm so proud to be a member of the New York City Fire Department because what we do is we depend on each other. We put our life on the line for each other. And that's why everything we do is based on an aggressive interior attack. Yeah. And that's why we're able to rescue people and bring them back. And that's why we're not afraid to go in, because we know our guys are going to pull us out.
Yeah. Now, obviously, you were here also with the recovery effort. Yes. Can you tell us about that and in your experiences being here after 9/11?
I worked that whole night. And if you look from this area all the way down to the horizon there, you see those tiny little people. That's how big it was. All of this was a pile of rubble. And as we crawled through the debris, I could see molten lava-like steel. I mean, molten pools of lava. There's only one thing that can cause that. It's weapons-grade thermite. Thermite is a product that produces the heat that turns steel into butter immediately, just like that. So there is so much evidence out there that it's an incontrovertible fact. Those buildings were brought down. But what the problem is, and what architects and engineers is all about, is bringing that news to the public, because the mainstream media has failed to do it. Yeah. The mainstream media has done the job of the individuals in our government who have betrayed a sacred trust and were part of that false flag operation, the same false flag operation that has kicked off the endless war on terror. War on terror, which is an Orwellian misnomer. That's like war on dandruff. Give me a break. It's a slick slogan. Yeah. And what has happened? We've sent our sons and daughters off to fight these endless wars. We've created these ABC agencies that have promised us added security if we're willing to give up our liberties. Yeah. I think we've experienced that in the airports. Yeah. And Ben Franklin said anybody who's willing to give up some of his liberties for the promise of security deserves neither. Our founding fathers were really smart individuals. They knew what was going down, and we are not taught what they were all about. We need to understand our history. We need to understand these things. Yep. And it's all about our sons and daughters. It's about the future of our country.
Now, when you brought up the mainstream media, Jake Tapper of CNN recently came on air and said anybody who wants to question the events is disrespectful to the family members, to the survivors that were here on 9/11. What's your response to him? Because he said people are here protesting. We're actually here with Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers. He was out here. We're having press conferences. People are giving out information here. They said it was a protest that's disrespectful to family members and the survivors here. What's your message to Jake Tapper of CNN?
To Jake Tapper, I first of all, I think you should get another job because you're doing a disservice. Now, in answer to your statement about being disrespectful to the families, at the time that it happened, I was aware then that it was a false flag operation. However, I refrained from addressing it because of the protocols in the fire department where you don't speak to the media unless you have authorization, all right? And also, it would have been inappropriate because people were grieving at the time. However, for him to come out and say that now as a member of a mainstream media is great news to me. And I'll tell you why. Because when they start attacking Architects and Engineers, it means that the mainstream media is feeling our presence and they feel the need to do damage control in order to protect their lives. So that's good news to me. So let him get out there and give us more negative press because it has helped me to pass out the flyers by simply telling people here's the taboo flyer that he said is a no-no for you not to look at. And they scramble for him. So please bring it. Bring more. Okay?
Now, is there anything else you want to leave people with? Is there anything else you want to say about that, you know, horrible day on 9/11? Is any last message to the people out there?
Yeah. For me, it caused me to wake up. It caused me to research this entire situation. And it's the first thing I think of when I get up in the morning, and it's the last thing at night before I go to bed. I lost Tommy O'Hagan, Kenny Kumpel, and Bruce Van Hines that day. And we lost 343 firefighters, and we lost more people on that day than we did at Pearl Harbor. That's something to think about, and people need to start doing their own research instead of relying on the mainstream media.
Thank you so much for all your amazing work and having the courage to speak out. It really means a lot. Hope you guys appreciate it as well.
Yeah. There's another piece with retired firefighter Rudy Dent being interviewed in Times Square. May play that on Friday. I don't know. But once again, this situation is such that, yeah, it happened, but it didn't happen the way it really happened. It happened the way they want you to think that it happened. And they don't want you, just like he mentioned about Jake Tapper of CNN, saying, bringing up these controversies. This is why they told Spike Lee to tone it down or to remove any controversial information, particularly from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Don't put it in. They want to continue with the with the line that they have of how this situation went down. And it's unbelievable because it insults your intelligence too deeply. 404-573, good afternoon. 404-573, good afternoon.
Yeah, Hotep, Brother Oshie.
Hotep, Sister Lumumba. How you doing, dear? How you doing, Queen?
I'm well today, King.
Good.
I'm well. Yes. So, to address some of the questions that you have put forth today about the happenings on 9/11, yeah, that's always been kind of like a question for me, and I'll tell you why. First thing I want to ask you before I get any further into this is, what is building number 7? And hold that before you answer it, because I'm thinking that all I saw was the Twin Towers, the church next to it, and then Harrisburg and the Pentagon. But that will be the last part of my contribution. Mm-hmm. Firstly, when I looked at those towers, yeah, of course, the brick and mortar may fall, but the steel frame is still going to remain, you know,
no, not
fire.
If, Not if they have the kind of pyrite.
That's what I'm saying. Go ahead.
Yeah. What they did is they had explosives in there that pulverized the steel and all the concrete. As you looked at that, as you saw it go down, both of those, which is ironic, the first one to implode was the second one that was hit. North Tower was hit first. And logic would say that the one that is hit first has been burning longer. That's the one that should go down. But no, I'm saying all of this is an insult of your intelligence. But the second one that was hit was the first one to implode. And you see it just like blowing out all the way down, just pulverizing all of that material and killing all of those people, you know. And then moments later, the second one goes down. Building number 7, because of the implosions, they say fire. No, not because building number 7 is only like a less than a block or two away. Okay. And so they said that the fire jumped on building number 7 on multiple floors and caused that fire, and the fire caused that building to go down. Fire in and of itself. Now those fires, you know, they definitely could not have been hot enough to jeopardize the structural integrity of that building. It's impossible. It's impossible.
Or of the Twin Towers. The first plane hit at 9:13. I don't know why I remember that, but I do. And then the second one was like 18 minutes later.
Mm-hmm.
My question always was, how come only less than 4,000 people perished that day? At 9:13, those two towers should have been filled with people, because we know how they was about the clock.
Right.
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 They say 9, you better get the 5 off, 10 off.
Right.
They say 9, they mean 9. Mm-hmm. So my question always was, how come those buildings was virtually empty? There should have been at least 20,000 people in those buildings.
Well, some when the building was hit began to quickly immediately evacuate, because the first building
hit. But that fire, the way those planes hit, I'm just using my common sense.
Sure, good. That's good.
With that fire and that fuel, not only was there fire and fuel, but then there are gases that are released. I say, okay, 10,000 people, if that many escaped. Let's just give it that.
Okay, what happened is this, Queen. The fires happened when the first tower hit, North Tower, way up on the upper floors.
And
80 plus. The second tower was hit, that was hit around 60th,
like
the 60th floor.
Yeah.
Right. And so the people have been evacuating from that particular point, you know, and they all could have got out except for those on upper floors if they could have been rescued. Possibility is, I don't know, you know, because the fires were raging, but it was not hot enough to melt steel and iron. It was not hot enough to do. It was not hot enough to do what you've seen, what was done. Those were demolitions that were set. And the irony of it is that the second tower that was hit was the first one to implode. You would figure the one that was burning longer would do it first, but no. You know, all of this is an insult to your intelligence. And because those towers imploded, they said NIST, the National Institute of Science and Technology, said fire jumped on that building number 7, which is like a block and a half away. So it's not far. So I'm quite sure it was hit by debris. But they said fire jumped in that building, and the structural integrity became so compromised about 4 or 5 hours later at 5:30, whatever, that building went down. But now, when you look at that building, you see it clearly, just like any demolition that you have ever seen on TV when they bring something down, because they want to bring it down within its own footprint. But that means in the structure where it was done. So you have just a pile of rubble. That's what they want to do. They don't want to go to sway here or there and start falling, you know, onto other buildings. They want to bring it down right where it is. And that's what happened. That's what happened.
Well, if all that flame jumped a block and a half down to set fire one building, what about all the buildings that are
right
in between that?
Right, there's because a lot of the buildings there. There's a lot of other buildings right there in New York. So you're right.
It's compact, it's dense there in
mm-hmm.
Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I never saw. I don't recall seeing that number 7 building on tape. I don't recall seeing that.
You can easily see it. You go to YouTube. You go to YouTube and you can put in, you know, World Trade Center building number 7. Believe me.
Yeah, you, especially at 5:30.
Yeah.
Because everybody's all consumed by right 10 o'clock with the first two towers.
Well, people were, you know, trying to get away. Wherever you were within a radius or vicinity of the World Trade Center, trying to get out as fast as you can. Didn't know, hell, is my building next? You know, I'm quite sure. And what's interesting about Building 7? Building 7 also had residents of a number of governmental agencies housed in those buildings. Okay? So, in fact, what I'll do.
Somebody else was in Building 7, so yeah.
In fact, what I'll have, right. In fact, what I'll have Friday, I have some of the agencies that were housed in Building Number 7, why it became very important. But also, too, I'll talk about Silverstein, Larry Silverstein, who owned Building Number 7 and was the lease owner, the lease holder of World Trade Center 1 and 2. So that's going to be
really
interesting. Yeah, it's going to be interesting Friday. So let me get some more callers, Queen. Got a couple more.
Yeah,
got a few more minutes.
Go. All right, peace to you.
Peace, my sister. Thank
peace
you.
Peace,
all right, such a Lumumba. Peace. 646-646, good afternoon.
Yeah, what's going on, Oshie? I was just listening, man. To be honest with you, I've never had no interest in 9/11. Ain't really give a damn about those that were killed. Always thought it was kind of crazy if it was a conspiracy theory or not, in regards to them calling and telling the Jews don't go to work or not. So
yeah.
I really don't know. I do remember, hold on.
Do you know? Did you hear Amir Baraka's piece? I'm quite sure you heard it. Who blew up America? Okay. When he did that piece, when he made mention of the European Jews, the Jews who were told not to come to work that day, you know, the only thing he was, you know, calling the question on was by the European Jews. Everything else he said, nobody said a damn thing. But those Jews called into question, you know, about them not going to work, who told them not to go to work, who saw them taking photos and film and so forth, you know? Yeah.
Well, he. I think that was the one time in his career he catch more hell than anything
sure
he ever
that's
said.
Right.
And I
yes
mean,
and he's said know, a lot, too, hasn't he? He
right,
has said a
right
lot.
I mean, Baraka, if you read and you listen to his poetry, man, he was, as mm-hmm one would say, a spit thrower on the highest
that's right
at order. But mm-hmm this right here, I think he lost more. It caused him more grief, in a sense, than anything. Now, I was going to say this. In regards to Larry Silverstein, or whatever the hell his name mm-hmm is, didn't he become extremely more rich after that? I mean, wasn't
yes
the payout
yes
that he received astronomical?
Yes. Yes.
And he had, and if I'm not mistaken, didn't he have to go to court to get that payout?
That detail I don't know, but I'll try to do some looking into it, and so we can
have some conversation on Friday.
Yeah.
I think what had happened was,
because I'm not sure,
but I think they had denied him the claim or something like that, or they didn't give him what he felt was the right amount, and he had to go and sue. And I think there was also some controversy in regards to the rebuilding, that he only rebuilt one of the buildings that he was supposed to. But the whole thing was kind of crazy, you know, in a sense. But you know, that's one of the, you know, if I must say so myself, I can tell you exactly where I was 20 years ago when it happened.
Oh yeah,
that's one of the few things I can honestly say that I can remember in life. I can tell you exactly
in detail
where I was, what I was doing, and you know what happened like the day or two afterwards. Because what was so crazy was I couldn't even get back home because of that. You know, that was what's so crazy. When it happened, I was in New Jersey, and I couldn't get across the bridge. And I also remember I got home, I think, a day or two after. It was either the next, day or the day after that. I got home, man, and like I lived around six or seven miles from where it happened. I would say anywhere from 6 to 9 miles from where it happened, right? I could still smell the smoke.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two days later, 2.5 days later, I know people who were down there who, because of it, they say contribute to them getting cancer.
No doubt.
Having respiratory problems.
Listen,
all of that.
Last week on the news, on the national news, you know, they talk about the people who did work, who were directly affected, who went down there to help and did whatever. 2/3 of those people, firefighters and civilians who were affected immediately by what happened that day there in New York City, developed cancer or some kind of respiratory problem, and some of them have already died. That's why.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them have died.
Yeah, they've already died. That's 20 years later.
Most of the people that are down there, most of the people who are down there have already died.
Yeah.
I think it's been like a few of the firefighters who went down there to work are still living, but they all have issues.
Yeah.
But you know, the crazy thing also is I had no inkling about going down there to help. And I thought people that went down there to help were effing fools. You know what I mean? I mean, that's like crazy to think that 20 years ago you would think that way. But, you know, at that time I was conscious. So
right, yeah,
all of the things that were at play.
Because you had the one brother.
Probably had something to do with it.
Yeah.
But you know also this, OC, if you know this, and I don't know, maybe you can speak on it more than I can. And it's funny because me and a friend was talking about it the other day. Do you notice that America never did a damn thing to Saudi Arabia, and they said that it was all Saudi Arabians who flew into that building?
Right.
Right. So they were not about geopolitics.
Exactly, because they were not Iraqis. They were not Iranians. They were not, you know, Yugoslavia. You know, they were not none of that, you know. Afghanis. They were not Afghanis. They weren't Al-Qaeda. They weren't the Taliban.
But this last thing, let me ask you this, because I'll be honest with you. I'm not really clear about it to this day, because that could tell. It'd tell how much I give less than that. Damn about it. But what was the reason for this action anyway? Because that's what I never got into, because I just didn't care about it.
Okay, the reason.
Why was it? Why did they do it? What was the reason?
The reason for I believe, and somebody can, you know, chime in on it. The reason for Europeans to take dominance and control over the planet unequivocally, call somebody a terrorist and have the world back them up by going into their country, regime change, controlling of money. That's what happened here in this country. They suspended a lot of civil liberties that you may have had. They've caused you to do some crazy things when you get to the airport, taking off your shoes, taking off everything in the name of national security. So what, you know, and this, of course, the establishment of Homeland Security. So what this did was making it easier for Western society, Europeans, Caucasians, America, you know, Europe, Australia, whatever, to crack down and suspend humans' ability to freely and walk and so forth, the liberties that they may have, to crack down on them. That's what this did. And also, to get money. Because what happened? When this, after the situation happened, you had a lot of contractors who were making big money. They went into Iraq and destroyed Iraq. And what's his name? Dick Cheney. That asshole. I mean, you know, what happened in Iran, what happened in Afghanistan, what happened all over. So that was the reason.
Yeah, but if you contractors never really made big money unless they were military contractors.
And that's who they are.
I mean, as far as building up those countries,
yes,
those countries still look like hell.
Of course.
20 years later.
They didn't go in there to build the infrastructure. They went in there to extract whatever raw materials and minerals that they, or that those countries right. had. That's what the bottom line is. Yeah. You know?
It's just like in Libya. I mean, you know, you can say whatever the hell you want to say about Gaddafi, but if you're going to tell the truth about Gaddafi, man, he was a hell of a leader in regards to the modernization,
exactly.
the education,
exactly. all of those things.
Everything for their people.
All
but
of those
now
things.
Now to look at Libya, it's a hellhole.
Exactly.
Third world country, as they say. Damn shame.
Exactly.
But
that's what they wanted to do.
About that.
That's what they wanted to do. You know, I talk about it. I'm mad as hell.
Most people never talk about that narrative of what Libya was, the way women were being treated,
yes.
things of that nature, to the way it is today. I mean, women should be up and protesting in regards to how they went backwards within that region. I mean, you know, I guess they were trying to show it in a sense yesterday because all of the women supposedly in Afghanistan was out in the street. But, you know, the Taliban and the boys in Afghanistan, the only reason I believe they keep women around is to serve them. So that's why they won't kill all of them. But they'll kill enough of them to make them into an example of, you know, y'all better shut up.
Or you'll be with them.
Live
yeah.
with the program. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, right. that's just real talk. You know, they can't kill all the women because they need them to reproduce sure. and they need them to service them. I mean, that's as barbaric and, you know, backwards as one could get. But if you're going to tell the truth about it, that's the real.
Yeah.
You know, as my brother would say.
I hear you.
You know, it's the whole 9/11 thing to me. It's just never been one of those things that I got into, man, the conspiracy theory, all of that. Man, I always thought it was just a waste of effing time because, you know, they were just some dead people that, you know,
man,
was
well,
par for the course
well,
with America's wicked treatment.
Well, you know, Jay, I got to go. I got
to
go. I'm already past the time, but I appreciate it.
Hey,
I hope you can listen on Friday.
Friday's show.
All right, my brother. I appreciate you, Jay. Thank you. And thank you to all of the callers and those who listened. I really do appreciate it. I'll be back on Friday. And once again, try my best to research the information that this whole scenario gives us, so we can make some sense out of it. But more importantly, we need to know what it is, how it happened, and why. And as the saying goes, let's follow the money. And that's what we'll do. So, brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell, damn it, don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed day. Hope to see you on Friday. Peace, family.